Happy Thursday afternoon, Chattanooga. Welcome into the local zone. This is ESPN 105 on the zone. I'm Brooks Carter, your host each weekday from 2 to 3. You can listen on air, obviously, 105.1 online, ESPNChattanooga.com. You can listen on that TuneIn radio app, or if you've got an Alexa smart home device, you can listen that way as well. Several different ways to listen, several ways to interact with the show as well. Over the phone line, 423-648-1051. You can follow me on Twitter at Brooks A. Carter, the show account at LocalZone1051. Coming up on today's show, going to recap all of the postseason action taking place, several district tournament championships yesterday on the softball and baseball sides of things, with district champions being crowned as we get prepped and ready for the region stage of the postseason action now that will begin next week. And then we've got some Georgia high school baseball and soccer action down with a handful of our North Georgia teams still playing in the GHSA playoffs. And then coming up in our next segment, we will be joined by Joe Smith in studio. He's the organizer for the Golden Gloves boxing tournament that is taking place here in downtown Chattanooga at the Convention Center. He'll talk to us all about that. That's been going on throughout the course of the week this week and culminating this Saturday. So he will tell us a little bit about that and the cause and how you can get involved with that and come out and watch all of these great young boxers, whether they be from this area or they're just in this area for this week to participate in that boxing tournament. So be sure to stick around for that. We will, as always, open up the phone lines to you to interact on any sort of sports topics and conversation that you might want to chime in on. And trying to keep the theme consistent as we have throughout the course of the week, we'll talk a little bit of college football as well, as I continue to ripen the appetites, perhaps, of myself, but of the audience here as we enter a portion of the sports calendar where the diehard football fan that may not really be overly interested in what's going on with the postseasons of the NBA and NHL and kind of entering that little lull of the summer stretch of baseball where maybe it's not quite as interesting, perhaps because if you're a Braves fan, the only team that they can seem to consistently beat is the Miami Marlins, but I think we could field a team here at Brewer Media and beat the Miami Marlins. They're pathetic. But with that in mind, let's get into today's three big things.
What's making the local and regional sports headlines? Find out now.
We will begin in Georgia before we'll transition up here to Tennessee with everything going on a little more locally to Chattanooga. But let's begin in Georgia with some baseball and soccer playoffs. Gordon Lee sweeps out Seminole County in the Elite Eight of the Class Single-A Public School Baseball Playoffs. Talked about Gordon Lee a little bit yesterday. They were the number two overall seed of the entire bracket in Class Single-A for the public bracket. And they are a team that is routinely there in the Final Four in state playoff or state championship contention, and they will be no stranger once again. Yesterday, they played in a doubleheader, beating Seminole County 11-4 in the first game, 15-0 in the second game. And let me tell you, if you're beating teams that bad in the Elite Eight to advance to the semifinals, one of two things is the case. Either the competition is not that good or you're really, really good. Could be a combination of both, perhaps. But in the case of Gordon Lee, they are a consistent presence each and every year. And to beat a team this late in the game, to survive in advance, not even really surviving, just advancing for the most part, to sweep out an opponent this late in a postseason run by that large of a margin is definitely impressive. Looking at the soccer side of things, though, for the Georgia High School playoffs, we had three teams in action in three different classifications, 6A, 4A, and 3A. All three there in the Whitfield County Dalton area. Beginning in 6A, Dalton 5-1 winners over Glen Academy. They advanced to the Final Four and will continue to play at home as they award the region champs out of their region in 6A. Southeast Whitfield 4-0 winners over Spalding. They advance onto the Final Four semifinals. And then also Cahola Creek 4-1 winners over Windsor Forest in AAA. So all three teams advancing down in North Georgia as the soccer dynasty of that area continues here at the high school level. We had Northwest Whitfield winning a state championship that's in that same area last year in soccer. And now you've got three teams in three different classifications with an opportunity if they can pick up two more wins apiece. Imagine that. Three teams in the same area, same city, winning state championships in the same sport. That would be, I don't remember the last time something like that would happen. Hamilton County has a lot more schools in their county than they would down in some of these North Georgia counties, but that would just be absolutely remarkable if these three teams are able to, in fact, go on. And even the fact that they're already sitting here in the Final Four, three teams from the same area is really remarkable. But for Dalton and Southeast Whitfield, this is familiar territory. Both of those programs have been here several times over the last decade. Dalton has won multiple state championships in soccer over the course of the last 20 years. But for Cahola Creek, this is a high school that just opened in the fall of 2011. This is the deepest run ever for their soccer program and actually ties the 2017 baseball program for the furthest that any sports team has ever gone in the playoffs there at their school. Moving on to number two. Look at some softball action here. The Baylor Lady Red Raiders roll past GPS yesterday to claim the East Middle Region title. For the Red Raiders, freshman Sid Berzon had 14 strikeouts yesterday, mowing them down for the Baylor Lady Red Raiders as they defeat GPS 7-1. Baylor and GPS split their two regular season games here throughout the course of the spring, but Baylor got the best of their arch rival when it mattered the most. The four-time defending Division II-2A state champion Red Raiders continue their great run of success here as they've got their own little dynasty themselves in softball. They're 37-3 on the season, and they were 13-1 in region play, including this tournament here. So the Red Raiders setting themselves up for perhaps a five-peat. That's is unbelievable. So you got this class, the class of seniors from last year graduating, having won a state championship all 4 years they were there. And now this group of seniors as well, who has won one every year that they've been there, with an opportunity to continue on and do that once more. And what's funny about that is they're led by a freshman pitcher. All this success that Baylor has had over the last 4 years, and again here in a fifth straight year, you'd think that it would, you know, result in being led by some upperclassmen who have gone through the process of all of these deep postseason runs to state titles. But you got a freshman ace out there striking out 14. Got to love that. Just getting an immediate impact player into a top-notch program. That is that clearly indicates that Baylor is not going anywhere when it comes to state championship success. So congrats to the Lady Red Raiders on winning the region title over GPS. Moving on to number one, we had some district baseball champions crowned yesterday coming off of their tournaments. We will begin in District 5-3A. Soddy Daisy rallies to beat Bradley Central 8-6. They win their first district tournament championship since 2010, and they were the host as well, so they got to celebrate on their own home turf. And for them, they came into this as the 3-seed. They kind of, really finished the regular season on a high note. They won several series in a row to finish at 8-4 and get that 3-seed in the district tournament, which earned them a bye. The way that the tournament was set up was the top 3 seeds got a bye, and the bottom 4 of the 7 teams had to play their way in to the semifinals. So for Soddy, they used that to their advantage. They wound up sweeping East Hamilton to get themselves into this championship series, and they wind up beating Bradley Central yesterday 8-6. They were down 6-5 late in the game, and then they rallied with 3 runs of their own late in the game to win this championship. So for them, they get to stay at home in the region, which is, as I went kind of on a big spiel about yesterday, a big deal to be able to stay at home and not have to travel upwards of an hour to play an opponent on the road at the region tournament level. So congrats to Soddy Daisy on winning the District 5-3A Baseball Tournament Championship. Looking at some other ones, Sequatchie County winning their District Tournament Championship. For Sequatchie County, they win the District 7-2A Championship, and their long postseason baseball drought is over. It's the program's first district title in 19 years. We talked about Soddy Daisy. It was their first in 9 years. We'll double that up by an extra decade for the Sequatchie County Indians. It was a 2-0 win over Grundy County last night. They got a really strong pitching performance from Zach Lockhart as he was on the mound and went 6 innings for them as they shut out Grundy County with some great pitching and solid defense. That's all they needed to get that 2-0 victory. And then here locally, the big one that we talked about yesterday, in fact, had Josh Gandy, the head coach, on from Signal Mountain before their game with Hickson. They played yesterday over at Hickson High School, and they won. They defeated Hickson for the 3rd time this year. 6-0 winners. Pardon me, that was the Signal Mountain baseball score. Get this, though. Looking at their win in this district tournament, 3 games that they've won in this district tournament, they scored 44 runs. They had 24 in a win, or 21 in a win over Central in the first round. They beat Hickson 15-5 to get them into the winner's bracket championship, and then they beat Hickson again. 44 runs in a district tournament. That is incredible. For them, though, they move on and have a shot to win the region once again. They won it last year. And for this senior class, I'm looking on Signal Mountain Baseball's Twitter page. This is the 100th win for this senior class. That's pretty remarkable when you are able, if you think about that over the course of a 5-year period or a 4-year period, that's at least 25 wins a year, an average of 25 wins a year to get to 100. And if you're getting to 25 wins in a season, a year in high school baseball, you know that you're having a lot of regular season success, but also a lot of postseason success. So congrats to all the district champions from yesterday, Sequatchie County in 7-2A, Soddy Daisy in District 5-3A, and Signal Mountain over Hickson in District 6-2A, as they all will be 1 seeds coming up in their region tournaments, and the other 2 teams still advance and will still be alive. So don't forget about Bradley Central out of District 5-3A, Grundy County out of District 7-2A, and Hickson out of District 6-2A. All right, when we come back, going to be joined in studio, or scheduled to be joined in studio, by Joe Smith from the Golden Gloves boxing tournament that's taking place this week and culminating this Saturday in downtown Chattanooga at the Convention Center. He'll be popping in studio, to talk to us about that and everything going on. So stay tuned. This is the Local Zone on ESPN 105.1 The Zone. All right, welcome back into the Local Zone here on ESPN 105.1 The Zone. I am Brooks Carter, host of the show here. Follow me on Twitter at Brooks A. Carter. Follow the show account at Local Zone 105.1. Hoping to catch up with Joe Smith here maybe in a few minutes, so we'll push that back a segment if we can get him in studio. I know he's busy. He is our studio downtown, actually across the street from the convention center where that Golden Gloves boxing tournament is taking place this week. So hopefully we'll catch up with him here in a few minutes. Looking at a topic I was kind of reading through earlier this morning that I wanted to touch on, kind of keeping that theme of some college football, some SEC football here in the offseason. Looking through each SEC team's predicting when their first loss will be on the year. And this one, this article, courtesy of Saturday Down South. And I found some of these interesting in here. Obviously, when you put together an article like this, you have to predict an actual loss. Assuming that a Georgia or an Alabama would in fact lose. So these are always kind of fun to read because it's always like hypothetical based for sure. And they went through these in alphabetical order, beginning with Alabama, and it says postseason. So no actual opponent, because that opponent in a postseason obviously is yet to be determined. And the bigger question for me, though, is if in fact Alabama is to lose in the postseason, is it at the SEC championship game or is it in the playoff? Because to me, if it's the SEC championship, then it holds them out of the college football playoff. Perhaps. We don't know. They lost to Auburn 2 years ago, their last that held them out of the SEC championship, and that was the last time the committee saw Alabama, and they still got into the playoff. So you don't ever know. To me, at some point, if you lose that late in the year and you're Alabama, whether it be, you know, an Iron Bowl loss or the following week in an SEC championship to Georgia, you're gonna get held out of the playoff. Because if your last, you know, impression on the committee is a loss, that never bodes well. I think I was as surprised as anybody when Alabama got in 2 years ago. When their loss to Auburn was the last thing the committee saw from them, and it was not a good game. It was prior to the 28-point defeat to Clemson last year. The loss to Auburn was actually the largest margin of defeat that Alabama had in the entire Nick Saban era, 26-14, a 12-point loss, and they still got in. At some point, you have to assume even. This is why I'm kind of harping on this, because the article's trying to predict each loss of SEC of each SEC team. It just says postseason. The reason I'm harping on this is because if it is the SEC championship, if that is their first loss and that's the postseason, then it holds them out eventually. Eventually, a loss, even if you're undefeated in the regular season, is going to hold Alabama out. Because that's been kind of just the assumption the last few years. Like there's an assumption out there that if Georgia doesn't lose to LSU on the road last year with their performance in the SEC championship, even with that loss, if they're 12-0 in the regular season, they still get in. That may have been the case, but I just have a hard time believing that each and every year, the SEC is going to continue to be in contention to put two teams in the playoff. Eventually, some of these other conferences got to trot out an undefeated regular season team. Eventually, the Pac-12 is going to float out. Somebody's going to run through that conference and they're going to go undefeated, and the committee is going to have to put them in. Somebody's going to roll through the Big 12, whether it be Oklahoma or Texas, undefeated or with one loss, and you're going to have to put them in. Such an interesting conversation, but about most deserving versus best. And that was definitely the case last year with a two-loss Georgia team versus who perhaps wasn't the most deserving, but through the eye test, maybe looked better than that of a Notre Dame or an Oklahoma, a Notre Dame team that was undefeated. Looking through some more notable teams, though, predicting their first loss, Auburn on the road at Texas A&M in week four. That should be a big-time game. And the thing I like, the thing that this assumes is Auburn actually beats Oregon in week one, though. So if their first loss is not until week four at Texas A&M, it's a pretty damn good start for Auburn. It means they've gone 3-0 and beaten Oregon in a neutral site opener, an Oregon team that includes Justin Herbert. I would actually favor Auburn in that game as well. I think Auburn's still got a fantastic defense. I think they're still one of the top five front sevens in college football. And to me, that is going to be the best part of the week one matchup is seeing Justin Herbert and the Oregon Ducks offensive line, how they're going to try and block and counteract how good that front seven is for Auburn. But that assumes they're saying week four at Texas A&M. I could definitely see that, especially with how trendy everyone and how good everyone is expecting Texas A&M to be this year. But as I mentioned, though, that assumes that that's a big or that they get that big non-conference win to start the year over Oregon. Week four or week six for Florida is what they're saying. And that would be to Auburn. So they're giving a lot of love to Auburn here. They're saying Florida loses at home to Auburn and that Auburn beats Oregon in week one. Hey, I said this earlier this week on the show. The Auburn Tigers, when no one expects anything from them, that is when they're at their best. When they hype up Gus Malzahn and his team in the preseason, and they're like a top 10 preseason team, that's when they fall on their face. But when you're not expecting anything from them, like in 2013, like when you had a new transfer quarterback, Jarrett Stidham, in 2017, those would have been the two best seasons. Kind of the same thing, too, back in 2010 when Gus Malzahn was the offensive coordinator for Auburn. I think they were ranked like maybe in the 20s, and not too many people were sure what to expect out of Cam Newton as a transfer quarterback. They come out and win the national championship. But a lot of love for Auburn in this article. So Florida, they're saying their first loss of the season would be week six at home to Auburn. Georgia, they're saying their first loss would be week 10 versus Florida in Jacksonville. That's assumes a win over Notre Dame at home in week four, which I think the Dogs should take care of Notre Dame. I think Notre Dame got so exposed on a national level last year to Clemson that this is going to be a big statement game for them. But, you look at when they go play in these hostile territories, whether it be when they match up in one of those ACC mandatory games on the road at like a Clemson, they haven't always been too successful, and I don't think that they will be this year against Georgia. So that assumes a week four win for Notre Dame for Georgia over Notre Dame, and that means they would be undefeated. I'm not sure of when their bye week would be, but that would be either 8-0 or 9-0. I'm going to say 8-0, assuming a bye week would happen for Georgia before week 10. But that would be 8-0 for Georgia going into the Florida game, and if that's their only loss, that would probably still put them at 11-1 to end the year, but how many losses does Florida have? Some more notable ones, LSU week two at Texas. That's going to be an unbelievable game. LSU on the road at Texas. I can't wait to watch that game. I think that's a coin flip. Texas, a big-time win over Georgia to kind of catapult them into this upcoming season. How well do they capture that momentum? If LSU wins that game, the conversation and narrative on Ed Orgeron continues to change. Because we all thought LSU was stupid when they hired Ed Orgeron. Most of us did. And he's continued to just progressively and quietly win games. 10-win season last year. New Year's Six Bowl win. If they go out and get a Week 2 win at Texas, a Texas team that is probably ranked top 6, top 8 in the country, that would be a big-time statement win for Ed Orgeron. And to wrap it up here with Tennessee, they're saying their first loss of the year will be Week 4 on the road at Florida. So that assumes a 3-0 start, which would be great news for Tennessee because that already gets you halfway to a bowl game. How much of the hype train will be rolling for Tennessee if through 3 weeks they're 3-0 on the road at Florida? How much confidence and how much of the hype train are you jumping on if Tennessee's 3-0 going on the road? That would include a win over BYU, a decent BYU team. How much of the hype train are you jumping on with Tennessee if they're 3-0 entering Week 4 at Florida? That would be a conversation I would like to kind of continue to open up here throughout the last half hour of the show. We're going to take our break here on the Local Zone. I think we've got Joe Smith in the studio. He'll be joining us next to talk about that Golden Gloves boxing tournament happening here in downtown across the street from our station at the Convention Center. Stay tuned. This is the Local Zone on ESPN 105.1 The Zone. Welcome back into the Local Zone here on ESPN 105.1 The Zone. Coming up on about 2:38 here, so 22 minutes left in the show. I am Brooks Carter, host of the show. Find me on Twitter at Brooks A. Carter, the show account at Local Zone 105.1. And happy to be joined in the studio now by Joe Smith, who is the event organizer for the Golden Gloves boxing tournament that's been taking place here at the Convention Center in downtown Chattanooga all week. How's it going, Joe?
Thank you, Brooks, for having me. And yeah, we started boxing Monday, and I tell you, there's a lot of great athletes just right across the street from where we're sitting right now.
Yeah, that's what you've told me. So kind of enlighten the Chattanooga audience who is maybe a little unfamiliar or maybe has kind of forgotten or about the tournament or whatever that's going on. Talk to us about the event and what's been going on all week and how it culminates here on Saturday.
This is the 2019 National Golden Gloves Tournament of Champions. So this tournament's been going on since 1937. It's the longest amateur boxing tournament in the world. The Golden Glove brand, anybody that knows anything about amateur boxing has heard of Golden Gloves. All the athletes that are here had to qualify to get here, meaning they had to win their state, their region, to get here to Chattanooga. So there's 350 athletes, both male and female, various weight classes, and we have at least one athlete from all 50 states.
Wow.
So it's pretty incredible. Three boxing rings going at the same time. And the interesting piece about this, the winners that'll come out of this tournament is who you'll see in Tokyo in 2020.
Why Chattanooga? How did this event come to Chattanooga? You talk about people from all over 50 states. Of all the cities that could have been selected here, why Chattanooga?
Well, Brooks, you know, this tournament, you're right. It goes to Las Vegas. It goes to Chicago. It goes to New York, Madison Square Garden. This event don't come to Chattanooga, but it's here. We hosted this event back in 2007. And at that time, I was the team manager for the U.S. Olympic team. So, you know, there was a little politics involved. But listen, our city, there's so much to see and so much to do. And, you know, it's within a 1 day's drive. Chattanooga's within a 1 day's drive of 62% of the population of the United States. So it's pretty centrally located. But the athletes love coming here. We've hosted several huge events, and we're thrilled because it don't get any better than this in the amateur boxing world. So we're thrilled to be hosting this event this week.
Of the amateur boxers who have come through this tournament over the years, who is some of the more notable ones that are now professionals?
Well, the first one that comes to mind, and it's interesting, way back in 2007, young Deontay Wilder on his ninth amateur boxing bout won a national Golden Gloves championship right here in Chattanooga. And, of course, went on to win a bronze medal in 2008 in Beijing. And now he's the heavyweight champion of the world. He's from Tuscaloosa, Alabama.
Very familiar. I'm a University of Alabama graduate, so I'm very familiar with Deontay, the bronze bomber.
The bronze bomber. So many great athletes that are now world champions. Demetrius Andrade from Connecticut, Gary Russell Jr. from Washington, D.C., Sean Porter from Las Vegas, all those guys, they're now world champions in their respective weight classes, won a national title here in 2007. So what I want your listeners to understand is that's an indication of the level of talent that's here this week. So if you like amateur boxing, it don't get any better.
So talking with Joe Smith here, the event organizer from the National Golden Gloves Boxing Tournament taking place here throughout the course of the week here in Chattanooga, culminating coming up here this Saturday on May 11th. There's a couple of notable boxers on the professional trail here from Chattanooga. Have they come back and gotten involved? What's their level of involvement in this tournament?
Well, of course, Ryan Martin, a young man that came through our program as an amateur. He's now 21-1. He's still out there. He lives in L.A. now. And then Roger the Hitman Healy, a local product, who incredible story, and he's 6-0 now as a pro. And ironically, he's coaching down in our amateur program. So that young man has reproduced himself, and he's given back to these young people. So we've had a lot of success with a lot of athletes, but more importantly, Brooks, is we're trying to teach these kids lessons about discipline, hard work, habits, respect. Take those lessons from the boxing gym into math class and science class and into every walk of their life, because, you know, life is tough. You're going to get punched in the nose sometimes. It's like boxing. So what are you going to do? You going to get up and keep fighting, or are you going to lay on the canvas? So what a great sport for young people.
Tell us once again kind of the event details, tickets, if people want to come out and watch, and kind of what's in store here for the next couple of days leading up to the final day of the tournament.
Okay, it's every night at 6 p.m. From now through Saturday. And, Brooks, we wanted to make this affordable so that everybody could come. So $10 gets you in. And starts every night at 6. There'll be 20 bouts in all three rings, so you're going to see a lot of action. Saturday night, the finals. Once again, $10 for a general admission ticket, but we also have ringside tables available that will seat 8 people, and you'll be right up close. Those are $300. Great place to bring your friends and sit around and drink a Bud Light and enjoy the finals on Saturday night.
All right, Joe, thanks for stopping by with us here. Don't let this bad weather deter you. Come out and enjoy this weekend here in downtown. It's inside, so you won't get wet.
That's true. And I'll say this, Brooks. If anybody comes and they leave 2.5 hours later and say, you know, this was a waste of my time, we'll give them their $10 back. I'll promise you that.
All right, fair enough. Thanks for stopping by, Joe.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. When we come back, going to take a quick little break here. We'll come back and continue some of our conversation we had about SEC football a little bit earlier. Tennessee fans, I want to hear from you. That topic I was discussing. If the Vols are 3-0 going into Gainesville in week 4, how much of the hype train are you jumping on at that point? Would love to hear your input on that conversation. 648-1051. We'll be back on the Local Zone here on ESPN 105.1 The Zone. Welcome back into the Local Zone here on ESPN 105.1 The Zone. 47 after 2 o'clock here, so coming up on the last 10-15 minutes of the show here before we'll toss it off to David and Jay on Press Row to take you home from 3 to 6. Thanks again for Joe Smith for stopping by the studio here. Just a short little walk across the street, if you're familiar with the downtown setting here where located. Our station is across the street from the Convention Center where the Golden Gloves Boxing Tournament is taking place this week. Just a few more days left in that, as he mentioned. Only a $10 entry each day of the tournament if you would like to come out and support a local cause and watch some amateur boxing. So, kind of the article I was looking at earlier that was on Saturday Down South, kind of predicting each SEC team's first loss. And as I was reading down through it in alphabetical order, The last one that they one of the last ones they mentioned, obviously, would be Tennessee. And they're predicting Tennessee's first loss of the season to be Week 4 on the road at Florida. And that assumes a 3-0 start that would include a win over BYU, which I think would be, for where this Tennessee program is at right now, considering, you know, BYU has been a solid program over the last decade or so. I know they had a little bit of a dip a couple years ago after Bronco Mendenhall left, dropping down, I think, like 4-8 on the year. But they had a decent rebound year last year. So that assumes a win over BYU. If you go down on the road at Florida and you're entering that game 3-0, you assume that that's going to be the big 3:30 kick on CBS, SEC on CBS, so you're going to have a big nationally televised game. Are you the Tennessee fan that has just been beaten down and you know, tired from everything that's happened over the course of the last 10 to 12 years with this program, to the point of where, no, you're not even bothering jumping on the hype train, you'll believe it when you see it? Or because it's Jeremy Pruitt and it's year two and it's still kind of fresh with this new era of Tennessee football, if you have a 3-0 start and perhaps, you know, it is an impressive win by a couple of scores over BYU, and you know, Jarrett Garantano comes out and you know, looks real sharp through his first full game, first few games, and the offensive line looks pretty improved. Are you jumping on the hype train as you head down to Florida? Because a win there, obviously, I think a bunch of people would be jumping on the hype train at that point. But what about before a potential win over Florida if you're 3-0? What would the Vols have to prove in the first three games? And how good would they have to look for these Tennessee fans out there, the VFLs, Vol Nation, to be like, yeah, you know what, I might consider it if they did X, Y, and Z in the first 3 weeks. Or, you know, maybe there's nothing. Maybe there's nothing that they could do even if they started 3-0 in the first 3 weeks, because it still is not into the major relevancy of the Vols schedule. I tend to be an optimistic guy, a guy who, for me, I really enjoy, and it's funny, I get crap from my my buddies from college when kind of the way that I talk about Tennessee now, because growing up a Bama fan and then going to school there, you know, naturally that's a rivalry. I don't really care about that though anymore. That's not my job. The main team, college team we cover here an hour and a half down the road from Knoxville is going to be Tennessee. And I enjoy seeing them play well. It makes my job more fun. We've talked about that on air here before. When Tennessee's good, like Tennessee basketball this year, it was fun to talk about. It made our job more fun because Tennessee basketball was good. So if they start 3-0 and they look good doing it, you know, they go out and beat BYU, you know, 38-21 maybe, and put up, you know, 225, 230 through the air and have a pretty solid run game. I think that that might get me to maybe believe in this team's chances to go on the road and start 4-0 and beat Florida. Because that would be a program-turning type win under Jeremy Pruitt in year two. Because this is a very delicate era and time of Tennessee football. And I've talked about this a couple of times, but you're still clinging on to that historical relevance of, hey, we're the second winningest program in SEC history still. We've got all this, you know, tradition from all the from the years gone past of General Nealon and Johnny Majors and you know, Philip Fulmer and being a consistent top 15 program in college football. But the last 10 years, they haven't been. And they haven't really even been close, to be honest. And when you think about that, from a recruiting standpoint, that's your big pitch. That's one of your big pitches, is your historical relevance. How much longer are they able to do that if they don't eventually turn the corner and get back to a consistent winner? We got to take our final break of the show here on the Local Zone. We'll have just a couple of minutes when we come back. If you'd like to chime in on the phone line, we will have right around a couple of minutes, as I mentioned. 648-1051 is the number. We'll be back to wrap it up after this. All right, welcome back into the last few minutes of the show here on the Local Zone, ESPN 105.1 The Zone. A reminder that you can catch the daily podcast if you missed any part of today's show on our website inside the Podcast Center. All you got to do is click on the Podcast Center tab at the top of the page on ESPNChattanooga.com and scroll down and find the Local Zone. Looking at the full SEC schedule as a whole, though, I mentioned something that David brought up as he just walked in the studio a few minutes ago. A couple of years ago, Georgia and Notre Dame were week three in the regular season, and for some reason, I guess in my head, I was just assuming that would be as well. CBS, I mentioned that you would assume Tennessee-Florida would be the CBS game that week. Well, if they get a shot to put Notre Dame on there with Georgia, I would suspect they would probably do so because, especially considering typically Notre Dame is on NBC, so a chance to get the Golden Domers on your network against one of your rival networks would be a big opportunity for them. But if that's the case, then that potentially opens that Tennessee-Florida game up to be a primetime game on week two. It was week two in 2017. I knew it was a little earlier than week four, though, for Georgia-Notre Dame. But back to my point, if CBS elects to go with Georgia-Notre Dame as that 3:30 game, that potentially opens up Florida and Tennessee to be a primetime game. So Tennessee would be traveling to Ben Hill Griffin Stadium, the Swamp, for maybe like a 7 or 8 o'clock kick. Which we all know when the sun goes down, sometimes those stadiums get a little bit rowdier. The students and the fans have had a little bit longer time to tailgate, a little bit more time to get their buzz going. So it could be pretty rowdy crowd down there for the Vols in week four if that's a primetime game when they make that trip down there, which kind of looking at it now, suspecting it definitely could be. Thanks for tuning in, guys. Press Row coming up next here on ESPN 105.1 The Zone. Definitely stay tuned to that from 3 to 6. We'll be back tomorrow with our Friday show.
This is Chattanooga sports leader, WALV-FM Lakesite, the exclusive home of Atlanta Braves baseball. ESPN 105.1 The Zone, a Brewer Media Group station.